welcome to a very special program. 25 years ago, India was fighting a war in Kargil at altitudes which were unprecedented. The instructions to the Indian armed forces were clear. Evict the Pakistani intruders at any cost. Restore the sanctity of the line of control and ensure that something like Kargil never, ever happens again. It was a message our armed forces took to heart, the Army and the Air Force. This is a very special program because we focus on the role of the Indian Air Force in Kargil, with five veterans who were involved in attack and reconnaissance missions during the war. I had the privilege of flying with them 25 years ago in Kargil or over Kargil on Mirage 2000's, moments I will never forget. And I've kept up with many of these veterans over the decades. All of them ended up with extremely distinguished careers. Two of them ended up commanding the Western Air Command and the Eastern Air Command as air marshals. The only difference here is that while all of them have now retired, I continue to work. But let me introduce them, all of them brilliant fighter pilots. Air Marshal Raghunath Nambiar is the first man to hit Tiger Hill, firing laser-guided bombs. He'll tell us all about that. Air Marshal Dilip Patnaik, also involved in missions hitting Tiger Hill, including a mission, the details of which we will reveal for the first time and actually show you. Group Captain Sripad Tokekar, a Mirage 2000 pilot involved in hitting Pakistani posts in Manthodhalo, among other areas. Incredible attacks which changed the course of the war. We'll tell you why. In fact, he'll tell you why. And we'll show you the impact of that footage as well. Group Captain Anupam Banerjee became the spokesperson of the Indian Air Force back during Kargil. He flew MiG-27s, striking targets in the area. A MiG-27, a very different type of aircraft. It had its limitations and challenges. In fact, video of Anupam's from the war had him sitting next to bombs with some rather interesting messages on them. We'll show you that as well. And Wing Commander P.J. Thakur, who flew the incredible MiG-25, a jet capable of flying three times the speed of sound. Images that he took flying the MiG-25 helped India pinpoint the location of Pakistani infiltrators on Indian soil. It was with that information that we were able to strike, or the Air Force was able to strike the areas that they needed to. But let's focus on that one image, that one set of videos which really brought home what the mission of the Air Force was. 25 years back, I'd actually broken the story of the Tiger Hill attack, and I was fortunate enough in flying with the same pilots just a couple of days later, a couple of weeks later. So this is video of the actual hit. Air Marshal Nambiar with us was the first Indian to drop a laser-guided bomb in Kargil, taking out that particular target. Tell us the moment, sir, when you hit that. There was a mission prior to that where you planned to hit, then there was weather which came in the way. And then finally that success. What was your thought the moment you saw that going up?
Vishnu, the 24th of June will be forever etched in my memory because of the fact that we had a number of variables at that particular point in time. We had an aircraft which was being equipped with a new laser-guided pod which had never been used before in wartime. We had a new bomb which is being dropped for the first time in war. And we ourselves were not fully qualified or trained to the extent that we normally would be if we were operating a system. So given all these variables, I think when I pressed the trigger that morning at around 7:11, when I felt the aircraft shudder as it released about 600 kgs of load, it was a sort of sense of elation that the bomb has gone.
It took 30 seconds, but you wrote that it felt like an eternity, right?
That's right. I mean, those 30 seconds probably stretched for almost 2 minutes for me in space and time. Actually, it was actually 30 seconds only by the clock. But the time it took was at least a minute and a half or even more for me. And it was with, you know, bated breath, we were waiting for something to happen. And sure enough, when an explosion took place exactly where we had pointing the pod, we were hugely elated. And the immediate reaction was to give out our RT call, which was supposed to be a call of Bundolo, which was supposed to be Tarzan's war cry, indicating to everybody in the sky around that we had achieved our mission and we had to start doing the next thing, which we were supposed to
do. We'll come back to that hit in just a moment. But there was another hit which the Air Force has not really spoken about per se. And we can show it to you right now. Air Marshal Patnaik was one of the pilots involved in that. This was a nighttime attack on Tiger Hill, and there was a target which was struck over there. Air Marshal Patnaik, what time did you strike this?
It was around 0200 hours on
27. So 2 a.m. in the morning. Yeah. On which date?
27.
Why was this mission important? And give us the lay of the land. Which side of Tiger Hill were you attacking?
It's like this. If you've seen the Tiger Hill as such, it has slopes on either side. When you see it from the Indian side, line of control, it has got slopes on either side and fairly steep slope. The ratios required to take over captured posts was as much as 1:200. You needed 200 soldiers to take on one guy there, and he was merrily sitting from top and shooting down our guys who were planning to go up. So Nambi sir and me, we got to know that takeover of the Tiger Hill is possible only and only if both the approach to the top could be softened to the extent that our ground forces could go and take over. Around 2 o'clock in the morning, this hit took place. And after
what
this,
did you hit over here?
It was a resting place for those people who were holding on to that top. It happened at night.
Right.
At 2 o'clock. They must not have known what hit them. Our ground forces did not find much resistance thereafter to go and take over. And taking over Tiger Hill was important because that was one place which had direct line of sight to the Dras-Kargil road. So that is where they were able to direct their artillery towards our any movement that was happening, yeah, and all the shelling that was happening.
Yeah. Let's take a look at Air Marshal Patnaik. He certainly wasn't an air marshal then during Kargil. He was a squadron leader, right?
Yeah.
And this is what he told me 25 years ago.
Once the aircraft engine started up, everything was normal, been trained for it. However, the slight amount of apprehension was there. I guess it is only human to have that kind of apprehension for the first sortie.
If you go back in time, the Mirages got inducted about a week or 10 days after the Air Force had already started utilizing the MiG-27s. And if you remember, we had Nachiketa ejecting, Ahuja also ejecting but captured, and we also had one helicopter hit.
Yes.
That means it was very, very clear that the enemy had positioned surface-to-air missiles which were shooting down, I mean, at least shot down two of the aircraft. If you have a rocket firing at you and the altitudes that we were required to drop the bombs had never been done by any Air Force. For that matter, even we had never dropped bombs at those altitudes because to keep ourselves safe from the missiles, we had to pull out at least 26,000 feet altitude. And to pull out at those heights, we had to commence the attack at about 35,000 feet with a 30 degrees dive. And more important than that was, if we had to miss, our own forces were very close by. Having said that, at the end of it, we were successful. And here I would like to add that I think General Musharraf had not catered in his plans that air power will be utilized against his devious plans. There is one place where he went wrong, and this can be seen in Air Commodore Tufail of Pakistan, who had put it up.
Yes.
That their air force was not kept in the loop, and they had not factored that Indian Air Force will be utilized the manner in which it was utilized, all because of ingenuity and the efforts done back at Gwalior, wherein the group of people at Gwalior, starting with our AOC then, Air Commodore Aluwalia, who put all his might and ingenuity to get the Mirage 2000 to be utilized the way it was finally utilized. We did close to 140 odd sorties, all successful. We dropped close to 140 bombs. Again, all most of it successful, barring one odd which went dry. Otherwise, that's what makes me happy.
In fact, when I had flown, had the opportunity of flying with Air Marshal Patnaik and Shripad then, I was told never to report this. The actual integration, the Israeli assistance, the laser designator pod, and what it actually achieved, because it was giving out a capability. But it's now been spoken about and written about. But would you like to tell us a little bit about how that integration in double quick time in many ways changed the course of the air battle?
Okay, to start with, when the Mirage 2000 was acquired, we had only the Matra LGB laser guided bomb, which is a 1000 kg bomb with a Patrick laser designation pod. We had the Beluga, we had the Bab 100, and surprisingly, only 250 kg Spanish bombs, which were possibly to be used on the aircraft. Other than that, the 1000 pounders which are made in India had never been integrated. And fact of the matter is, all this integration, doing it in simultaneously while we were using the Spanish bombs, is something which needs to be given credit to the people back at Gwalior. That we had test pilots, we had test engineers, we had a very pushy Air Marshal Aluwalia, if I may say so, who ensured that the aircraft was made to have its teeth the way it is required to.
Right.
In the normal course, it would have taken us over a year and a half to actually get to a point at where we could start dropping bombs in peacetime. But given the fact that this was war, there was urgency which we which resulted us in taking that much many more risks,
sure,
which we normally would not do in flight testing.
Sure.
In this case of Munthodalo, when we were cleared to go and drop the bomb, we told command headquarters we need to go and see it visually because our troops are very close by. So the next day, we went on two trainers. Me and Tokekar were in one of the trainers. Air Marshal Mohan Rao and Ashish Singh in the other. We were almost at the edge of our endurance. Last minute, we picked up visually. Now, picking up visually is of more importance because when we are dropping a bomb at those heights, we need to designate at that particular point.
So you're talking about Munthodalo, right?
Munthodalo.
So what you see over there on the left is before the strike, and we've actually got arrows over there showing Pakistani tents. This was actually a logistics facility. We don't have video of the bomb hits themselves, but the image is on the right where that same location has been entirely hit.
Yeah, if I could say, the film on the left is what we picked up in one of the recce sorties, as Air Marshal Patnaik said. After failed attempts at locating based on ARC pictures or the INT pictures, what we decided is to do a systematic scan using the laser designator pod for our benefit to find targets in the snow-clad terrain. So it is one of these missions on 15th of June, morning about 10:30, that Mo and me were flying. When during the return, during the replay of the cassette on ground, is when we realized that we have actually picked up something. Now on that head-down display of 5-inch by 5-inch monochromatic, that is black and white with a green tint, there was no way that I could make this out. It only came up when we started replaying this tape on a 29-inch TV with a local player that we had managed, is when we came out that, okay, we have actually picked up something. So this was the CRM that we had developed.
Crew resource management.
Yeah, crew resource management, that the front pilot will look outside and fly visually and the rear pilot will manage the pod. That was me. And on the pod, I picked this up but did not realize it in the air. So after coming back, when we saw the recording, so now we were two of us who had, so to say, known where we had flown. The jubilation was great. We rewinded the cassette 3-4 times till somebody came up. Hey, ruk jao yaar, phas jayega to fir kuch bhi nahi milega. So that was one threat which was there those days. We all will remember VCP cassettes getting stuck and then you trying to extricate it.
But what I remember was your Top Gun look those days. So if we've got Shripa Tokekar with us in the studio now 25 years later, I think it's time to show what Shripa Tokekar 25 years back, if we can play that out.
We knew that they were around in that area because we could pick them up on the radars. But we never had any engagement. Quite a disappointing experience, I should say.
Yeah, You're talking about Pakistani F-16s, right?
Yeah, I am speaking about some opposition from the air.
Which was not there.
Which was not there. But initially, in the initial sorties, we did have, I should say, RWR pickups from the
radar
Pakistan.
Warning receiver.
Radar warning receiver pickups from the F-16. So on our radar warning receiver, we could sense that there were F-16s which were flying and which were radiating on their radar to pick us up. But then, if you turn towards them, they would turn away. So this happened a couple of times. So that is why that statement. It's not that it was a bravado or we were looking for something.
Of course it was bravado.
Yeah. We were more than confident that we could handle them. But not having them there, now in hindsight, the war is never good. It's bad for either side. So had there been some engagement, there would have been something more.
Toki wouldn't have used those words 25 years back, I'm pretty sure.
Yes. The fact was at that point in time, the Indian Air Force had beyond visual range missiles and the Pakistanis did not have that. So if we turned into them, they were, had no choice but to turn away and go back home.
Did any of you personally lock on to a Pakistani F-16?
Yes, I did lock on to a Pakistani F-16 once.
For how long?
Probably for about 30 seconds. Because the moment we locked on to him, he turned away. And the moment he turned away...
At what distance was this?
It was around 35 kilometers. And the moment he
Which
turned away...
Which is nothing.
Away,
I mean, in air warfare.
No, but it is not good enough
it
for a weapon solution
side,
those
right.
days.
Missiles of those days.
Yes.
In today's context, you would have opened fire, you would have launched.
Not really. Easily. He couldn't have launched at us because we were in a receding mode.
Right.
In a receding mode, he had to probably get us much closer, maybe 5 or 7 kilometers.
And he had just sidewinder missiles.
That's so right. And that required a 5 or 7 kilometer and a tail-on mode launch.
Right.
While we had BVRs, or we at least were supposed to have BVRs. As far as he was concerned, the moment we turned, even though we did not have BVRs personally with us, the fact is that he saw us turning and he was scared.
Right.
So he turned away.
Okay. I just want to play out video of the bombing in Mashko. Let's just play that video out because it actually shows a stick of, I believe, 6 bombs hitting Mashko. Shripad, what are we looking at and why was this an important target?
So in this particular video, what you see is a stick of 6 bombs being released from the Mirage 2000. These are 1,000-pound bombs. And all through this valley, there were pathways which were used by the Paki intruders to get their logistics and weapon supplies. So there were other videos in which you could make out that there were movements on this road. So we had been given the responsibility of obliterating the entire logistics chain as well as the Nissan hut. This is just one of the aircraft which is releasing a stick. There were 3 more which released similar sticks. So there was absolutely nothing left there.
Sure.
I would like you to look at this video once again closely, Vishnu.
Yep.
One aircraft has already dropped and the soot marks of that bomb stick are already on the ground and the lay of the land. The second aircraft is what you are actually seeing the bombs go.
I see.
In this you will notice the third bomb actually deviate, probably due to manufacturing tolerance, and fall well short and towards the left.
All of this in a sense became possible because of your mission. You flew a single MiG-25, an aircraft designed to fly at Mach 3 at speeds which were suboptimal for you. And you got the lay of the land sorted out for the Air Force so that they actually knew that A, the Pakistanis were there, and B, what to hit. Could you tell us about the threat or the danger that you faced in flying a huge aircraft at lower altitudes and at relatively lower speeds?
The only apprehension was of an airborne threat, which luckily Air Headquarters and the Mirage guys, they escorted me. So I could possibly do it.
And what did you find, what did you actually map? What were you able to detect across a large swath of territory?
I'll tell you, when I fly at 20 kilometers at 2.4 Mach, a single frame of a MiG-25 covers 32 kilometers by 32 kilometers, one frame. That means from my longitudinal axis, I've got 16 kilometers on the right, 16 on the left, 16 ahead and 60 behind. So when I pick up the Nissan tents, the whole lay of the land, at 10 kilometers, I'm picking up 11 kilometers one side, 11 kilometers one side. So that target will show the full lay of the land around it also. And I was operating at 10 kilometers, so was the strike force operating at 10 kilometers. So the lay of the land did not change what my photograph showed and what
they wanted.
What they wanted.
It became therefore very important to get a MiG-25 film which actually covered the entire stretch of area, including what we would call the aage piche of it, so that we were now aware that there was this tent which existed or this Nissan hut which existed in relation to a lake or some hill feature or some other prominent feature on the ground which we could relate to.
Now the terrain per se. When we started, the entire area was snow-clad. So, and the satellite imageries that we had the snow-clad. But what had changed was because of heat, because of movement, and because of firing, a lot of snow had melted. So, to correlate a snowless target area to that of a snow-clad satellite imagery was difficult. So when he came in, we got it in 2 days' time, 1 day's time. In fact, he flew it himself and got it.
Yeah.
So we knew exactly this is how it actually looks and this is what the photograph is.
We've got Group Captain Anupam Banerjee with us as well. He was a MiG-27 pilot, later on became spokesperson of the Indian Air Force. I'd interviewed him back in the day in Srinagar. Let's play that.
We are lucky people, fighter pilots. We could vent our feelings, anger by dropping bombs. They can't do it. For them, they give their feeling like this. You missed some nice ones, like, one was, this is a sixer from Sachin for Akram. One was this is to Imran from Zenith. And there are numerous ones. You had to see them. This was to Nawaz with the thing with a lot of awaj.
I guess I never figured out that picture and video will survive 25 years. Every year it comes back in internet now. And somebody will always tag saying that there is a photo of yours. So frankly, when I sat next to the bomb, I had no idea that it will be there for next 25 years or maybe more.
You flew MiG-27s over there, which in those altitudes was not optimally suited for. Even the Mirages weren't, but they were adapted. But your MiGs weren't adapted per se for the attack missions you carried out. How challenging was it?
So I'll quickly say that when the air operations started, you know, I had this very unique opportunity of flying with the chief of the air staff who came unannounced to the airbase. When I look back at that incident today, it is not normal for a chief of air staff to come and see the target area. Probably there was apprehension in the mind that whether the air operation, that is the ideal kind of place, chief wanted to see it for himself. So it kind of says that it was for the first time any air force who was operating at those kind of altitude. Now, we were in the end of May when this started, and we did not have the advantage of any photographs or anything. We were given a brief by the Army in some kind of a sand model, and we are told the target is somewhere there. Now, in a dive attack, when you are attacking, you get very less time to pick up the target, how it looks. You have no idea. The pictures are not available. So it was mostly a guesswork for us. So there were all these things which are stacked against us. And you know, the day, on the second day of the mission when we had gone for the Montodhalo attack, I still remember why I was selected to lead that mission, because in the morning there was a target in Jubar top, which later on became famous because of Captain Manoj Pandey, who got a PVC there. And we were told that the target will be lit up by colored smoke by artillery. So it was a crazy thing where one MiG-23, one MiG-27, we are over the target, and mind it, the targets were all manned by missiles, which that time it was not very clearly mentioned. And we were trying to spot a smoke somewhere and trying to hit the target. So it was that kind of a thing. Montodhalo was attacked on the second day. And that was the only target which looked like what actually to a fighter pilot should look like a target, because there's something which was there. But of course, from those altitudes, we could make out. But we could see something out there. And the targets were attacked. And we had different modes of thing. And this is the mission where we lost Nachiketa's aircraft. He ejected. And you have to understand why. Because the aircraft...
And on the same day we lost squadron.
Yes, because he was firing rockets and guns that... We are at the extreme edge of what the aircraft was cleared for. Similarly, even for the MiG-21s and 27s, toward the latter part, and 23s and 27s, that the GPS... which just came in, and we had no idea. So the second sortie that I flew with a GPS was a live bombing mission. So it was that crazy. Right. We were given one sortie, go familiarize with the GPS. How a GPS and how the flying looks like, and drop a
bomb on the next
bomb on the next day.
Well, gentlemen, it's been wonderful and a privilege to speak to you, and we'll do this again 25 years later as we remember Kargil at that stage. But I thought as we end this program, we just play out that original NDTV report all those years back, my experience with the Mirage 2000 pilots and some of the operations that they were involved in.
me a real idea of what it is to be flying in the Kargil area, some of the most treacherous terrain on the earth. The Indian Air Force has agreed to let me fly on this, a Mirage 2000. At the height of the Kargil conflict, this was a routine done over and over, many times during the day and often at night as well.
Of the Indian Air Force at an altitude of about 50,000 feet, heading out towards the Kargil region. The Mirage 2000 is capable of flying at 2 times the speed of sound and can perform maneuvers which test the very limits of human endurance.
The risks were enormous, but it was a job that had to be done.
Once the aircraft engine started up, everything was normal, been trained for it. However, the slight amount of apprehension was there. I guess it is only human to have that kind of apprehension for the first sortie.
Stinger surface-to-air missiles and anti-aircraft guns were the biggest threat. The IAF lost 5 airmen and 2 aircraft to enemy fire. For the other pilots, it was tough to accept the loss.
Immediate feeling that time was of anger which came. Initially was actually a shock, then it wasn't totally turned into an anger that with this thing has happened, we should go and continue with our missions to continue and attack the enemy.
The emotions of war are clearly overwhelming. With the IAF flying several dangerous attack missions every day, even ground personnel wanted to convey their message.
We are lucky people, fighter pilots. We could vent our feelings, anger by dropping bombs. They can't do it. For them, they give their feeling like this. You missed some nice ones, like, one was, this is a sixer from Sachin for Akram. One was this is to Imran from Zenith. And there are numerous ones. You had to see them. This was to Nawaz with the thing with a lot of Awaj.
At the height of the Kargil conflict, Indian and Pakistani fighter aircraft on either side of the line of control were separated by only 3 to 4 kilometers.
We knew that they were around in that area because we could pick them up on the radars. But we never had any engagement. Quite a disappointing experience, I should say.
But the belligerents cannot mask the fact that the IAF had to learn some hard lessons in Kargil. With better intelligence, the loss of lives could have been minimized.
It was entirely the Pakistan regulars which came and fought in that area. And they had missiles in very many places, which probably came as a little bit of a surprise to us.
And though the Kargil conflict may be over, senior pilots say they must learn from the mistakes made before the actual Pakistani incursion.
So the conflict is over now. So you're going to go home?
We will go home, yes. We will come back. But the air defense of this area continues to be our duty. And we will continue to do it round the year now. I think this is one of the lessons learned, that we cannot give up, leave any airspace for long.
But the immediate task in Kargil over, the young pilots are finally getting a chance to look beyond the enemy.
I wouldn't know about the most eligible, but yes, I guess I am eligible because I'm a bachelor and hopefully not for very long.
All right, so a look at the action 25 years back from all of us here. Goodbye.